I'm going to do another kind of special thing here. I get to introduce Elle Costanzo, who most of you have known Elle if you've been around for a while. You want to raise your hand, Elle? There you go. Many of you have known Elle. Elle was one of the people that, did you help plant the church? Did you come over? It was just a little bit after, right? Okay. Well, Elle is now working at the National Center for Institutional Diversity at the University of Michigan, but has been finishing up their three-year Master of Divinity program at the Ecumenical Seminary in Detroit. And so as part of that, they have to do an internship at a church for about a year. And so we get to have Elle as our church intern. And so I'm going to invite Elle up. Just going to talk a little bit about like why Blue Ocean and whatever you want to say, Elle. Come on up.
Testing. I was like, the green light is on. That's usually the key. Yeah, so I just wanted to come up here and chat for a second about why Blue Ocean, as we're sort of also kicking off the membership series. And so it was almost 8 years ago exactly that I walked through those doors over there with my two-month-old son. And as a very queer, recovering Catholic, it was the first time I had been in a church in over a decade. And it was the first Sunday after the 2016 election. And I came looking for community for my boy so he could grow up in a faith environment knowing that his family was love. But I had no idea that Blue Ocean would actually become our family. So I went from being a non-churchgoer to coming every week. When there was a need for the high school youth group, I volunteered to help start it and did so along with Caroline and Dave for almost 6 years. And folks around here were really encouraging me to step into gifts that I wasn't really able to see for myself yet, especially Ken in the beginning. And the first time he asked me to do communion, I told him that from my experience, only the priest was allowed to do that. And that if I was gonna do it, that's blasphemy. Ken just laughed. And every time he would ask me to do it after that, I would get a text from him asking if I wanted to play priest on Sunday. And the funniest thing is I really did end up in seminary. But I feel that, you know, my ministerial future probably didn't come as a surprise to Ken. So eventually I accepted a position as youth ministry director at a capital C church, and I had to leave Blue Ocean for a while. But I told Emily and Caroline that this was still my church, even if I couldn't be here on Sundays anymore. But it turns out that capital C churches are still not safe spaces. So I came back home to Blue Ocean. And Blue Ocean really is home for me. So I've lost a lot of family over the years, but Blue Ocean has remained constant and held me when I've fallen. Emily and Caroline have walked alongside me in some of my darkest moments. And I don't see Caroline here right now, but I really struggle to put into words how much her love and support has meant to me over the years. And Emily has always been there to remind me that even when I haven't made the best choices, I'm still lovable and on the right path, and has been a steady cheerleader for me without judgment and also a fierce protector when I've needed it. So. And along with Caroline, who's gonna be my supervisor, and Emily, of course, is gonna be a part as well. Susan King over there on Zoom is gonna be my other supervisor. And that all started right over there with her sitting on the same row as my son and I during service. and Susan would always sort of block Manny from running up to the altar. And because if you know Manny, he demands to be seen. So he. And Susan went on to become my spiritual advisor and another absolute lifeline. So thank you, Susan. So why Blue Ocean? My son, Manny, was baptized here. I was baptized here with my new name. I came out as trans and began to transition and started seminary while I was here. That's some powerful church, y'all. But seriously, I'm not sure that that would have been possible without the safety created by Blue Ocean. Some folks may have heard this from me before, but I'm often asked about what my theology is and how I could, as a trans person, be comfortable in ministry. But my theology is simple, that God is love, period. And that may feel reductive to some, but to me, it's everything. And I've never experienced a faith community that has embodied that more than Blue Ocean. I've witnessed Blue Ocean change and save many other lives besides my own. Blue Ocean is our home. Blue Ocean is our family. And I'm so blessed to be a part of it. And I'm so grateful to have this internship at home with all of you so we can witness each other on this journey. So thank you.
I feel like I don't even have to preach now. I mean, that pretty much was the sermon, you'll see. Yeah, I'm really excited to have Elle on board, on staff here for a little while, and look forward to Elle will be preaching a little bit and doing some different things. So we have been in this sermon series where we've been talking about the wisdom of Proverbs for the last few weeks. And even though we're going to start a new sermon series today, we're going to be looking at our annual membership series. I'm just going to continue using Proverbs as a springboard for a couple of weeks, because there are a couple sermons I didn't get to preach because of some family stuff, and I was like, oh, I can do this, right? So we're just going to mesh them up. Our church, what we do is we take a one-year approach to membership. And so every October or so, we take a few Sundays where we just talk about our values. We talk about where we see ourselves on the church landscape. We talk about what we might see coming up in the next year or so. And so I just want you to have on your radar that this next Friday, I'll be sending out the membership booklet and the link to the membership form in the weekly update. We'll have some hard copies also available next Sunday. And then we're going to be hearing 2 or 3 minutes each Sunday from a few people, different ministry leaders in the church, about some of the things we do in the church and also just why Blue Ocean. We did that a little bit when we first started the church, and we thought it might be helpful. I had some good board members actually who said it'd be helpful to like hear some of that again for some people who are newer, so you get a sense of who is here and why we're here and maybe different people to connect with. And so we might do that all the way through December. When Pastor Caroline preached a couple of weeks back, she was looking at the Proverbs, and she took it from the angle of she was looking at the ones that are riddles. Right, I don't know if you heard that one, but I listened to it and I was like, oh man, that was a great sermon. She was looking at just some of the hilarity of the Proverbs. She was talking about some of them could almost be insulting if they weren't being made in the spirit of this sort of playfulness and kind of delight in humanity's foibles. But there's another, I think, more serious thread that also exists in the Proverbs that I was struck by when I was reading them earlier this summer when I was kind of looking at this series. And those were the verses that acknowledge just like how profoundly our human emotions impact our experience of life, right? From joy on one end to suffering and heartache on the other. So I'm going to start with Proverbs 15:30. It says, "Light in a messenger's eyes brings joy to the heart. Good news gives health to the bones." Sometimes when I read a proverb like that, I'm a little like, well, duh, you know? Yeah, sure, everybody likes good news. It doesn't seem particularly insightful, but what I've found is that when I've just kind of sat with some of these proverbs, there's a little bit more to them. And I was thinking about just how that metaphor really goes into our anatomy. You know, like when something good happens, I was thinking about Lisa Ruby this week. Like if you get like a, hey, congratulations, you got that promotion. she in here? Oh, she's teaching Sunday school. She got a promotion. Go tell her hi. Tell her congratulations. But that's a joy that's felt like really, really deep in the heart, right? It goes to the center of us. And so good news, it says, gives health to the bones. And so the Proverbs notice just how much like joy impacts our health. It impacts our vitality. It impacts our lived experience of being in our bodies. Right, so early on in church history, this is in the first 100 or 200 years after Jesus lived, there were some parts of the church that started playing with intertwining some Greek philosophy with their Christian spirituality in a way that was like separating their spirituality from their bodies, right? It kind of like located spirituality out there, and bodies were seen as sort of suspect, sort of sinful, weak, prone to temptation. This sort of strand pops up now and again in Christianity. I would say the purity culture has a little bit of this sort of flavor to it, right? And so bodies were seen as a bit suspect. Union with God was seen as this thing that you would try to do, like transcending outside your body, right? Like this knowledge that could be attained on some higher plane. That's called Gnosticism. It's a little oversimplified here, but it disconnected our bodies from our faith. But Christianity pretty quickly rejected that line of thinking, right? Because it just acknowledged that our faith is actually just a very gritty, in-the-body kind of spirituality. I think it's hard to study Christianity and not conclude that our bodies, with all of our blood and sweat and tears and dirt and, you know, all the sniffly noses that we get and that kids get walking around, that those are holy. And union with God is not something that's seen as like special or weird or something that like really spiritual people or really godly people do. No, it's like this very practical everyday thing that all of us can do, right? That's just about caring for ourselves and others, going to work, playing sport, loving our neighbors. This idea that like walking with God is something we all do. It is a very practical faith. And so one of the ways that we communicate that is every Sunday when we take communion. Now, there's a whole lot of layers, right, to this ritual that we do each week. But one of them is just reminding us that our union with Jesus, symbolized by bread and wine, right, his body and his blood, it's just done by eating food, right? It's just one of our most basic necessities for living. So we all need food, we all need drink. And so union with God is just done through this everyday thing of eating, of sharing a meal with other people, and then using that nourishment that we take into ourselves to bring life to the world around us, right? So our spirituality takes place in these very flesh and blood vehicles through which we navigate the earth. And that's, I see this sort of earthy faith in the Proverbs. Proverbs 15:13. A happy heart makes the face cheerful, but heartache crushes the spirit. And again, that seems very simple. A happy heart impacts your demeanor. Heartache is hard. We know this. But when you're in a season when your heart is broken, you know, whether maybe you've had a lost or a failing love, maybe you're going through a divorce or a breakup, any kind of grief, maybe you've got a kid who's really struggling and your heart is just aching for them because you don't know how to help them. I think having like the depth of that feeling acknowledged and named within the faith tradition can be very validating. Right? Like it's really something to say, heartache crushes the spirit. Proverbs 18:14, the human spirit can endure in sickness, but a crushed spirit, who can bear? Right? So in my personal state of grief right now, many of you know I lost my dad about 3 weeks ago, it just feels like a kind thing to recognize. Right, like verse like that, it doesn't try to fix the pain, but it kind of feels like a friend who just kind of sits with me and says, you know, wow, that's just really heavy right now. Who can bear that? Right, and then I also like that Proverbs recognizes that like joy and sadness are not mutually exclusive. Right, Proverbs 14:13, even in laughter the heart might ache, and rejoicing might end in grief. We did this three-part series on grief earlier this year, and one of the things that we talked about was how sometimes when people are grieving, they feel a little bit guilty for having moments of happiness or moments of laughter in the midst of that, right? It's like, shouldn't I be sad right now? Like, my dad just died. And does that dishonor his memory to, like, laugh at a semi-inappropriate joke or to have, like, all of the, you know, little toys fall out in the middle of a service? That's great. That's awesome. But of course, we're human, and joy and sadness dance together. And I've got a little bit of a story, but I'm like, do I tell it? Because I don't want you to think badly of me. But this is what happened, right, in my grief. I'm just going to, like, so here's how I was processing. My dad died. Rachel and I go down that night, and we're with my sister in Meyer, and we're just walking around trying to get some, like, food and different things, family, right? And I've got this mantra in my head as I'm walking, my dad is dead, my dad is dead, my dad is dead. And so then I just start saying it out loud, and my little sister Lindsay was just like, okay, Emily, okay, that's where you're at. I'm like, yeah, that's where I'm at. And then I apparently just kept processing out loud, like, my dad died today. Did you guys know my dad died today? Then the next morning we go and we're like at the funeral home getting everything done, and I just kept saying, my dad died yesterday. Did you guys know my dad died yesterday? And finally my mom was like, oh my gosh, Emily, you have got to stop. Like, we know, we know. And Lindsay's like, oh, I swear if you do this one more time. And I was like, I can't help it. It's just like in me. And I said, I just need somebody to like tell me a joke. I need something that like cuts right through this. I need something to interrupt it. And Rachel, without missing a beat, says, knock, knock. I said, who's there? She said, not your dad. And I couldn't have loved her more. And we laughed and laughed, and that's okay, right? Joy and heartache go together. She's quiet, but she's witty. You gotta watch out for that one there, right? Oh, so all that to say, we really seek to promote like emotional health in the church community, right? We try to not like fix or paper over uncomfortable feelings. Try to be at ease with sadness and grief as much as we are at ease with joy and with contentment. And we also try and make space in the liturgies for like anger that's produced by injustices. We also talk a lot about how healthy spirituality is supposed to reduce shame, right? That's religion at its best should reduce shame. Brené Brown, we've talked, most of you probably have heard of her, right? She's the social work professor. She specializes in researching shame. She defines it as the intensely painful feeling or experience of believing that we're flawed and therefore unworthy of love and belonging, that something we've experienced, done, or failed to do makes us unworthy of connection, right? It's this feeling that something, somehow we're not enough. It's like, I mean, like what Elle shared this morning, I thought this like goes right in here. It doesn't matter what you've done, you are still worthy of love and belonging. Because if there is a God, and if this God is an embodiment of love, capital L, which is what Christianity claims, then we can stand before this God who is love as our full selves without shame, right? The Apostle Paul tells us there's absolutely nothing that we can do that can separate us from the love of God, not our joy, not our pain. He says, not heights, not depths, not anything in all of creation. There is nothing inherent about who we are that makes us unworthy of love and belonging. Not our socioeconomic background, not our cultural background, not our political beliefs, our education, our income, our productivity or lack thereof, who we love, the things that we have done, the people we've been, our whole selves, our crushed spirits, and our joyful vitality, all of it is already seen and known, and we are loved. And that is the bottom line standing with the divine. That's the baseline. And it's in this context of being wholly accepted and loved by God, that's when our rough edges have potential for transformation, right? It's like Caroline preached. She said, hard truths can be heard in the context of knowing that we are utterly delighted in and completely loved, right? So we are loved, whether we transform and grow or not. That doesn't matter. The transforming is for our benefit, right? That is for our thriving, and it is a testimony of God's graciousness toward us. But regardless, we are loved. And that might not seem fair, and that might not seem right, but that is good news. It reminds me of, it's off topic, but I think of like Jesus' story of the parable of the workers, the laborers in the field, right? Some of them like get the same pay, whether they started working at 8 a.m. or started working at 5 p.m. And you're like, well, that's not fair. I think the story is telling us a little bit about like God cares more about people having a living wage to feed their families than about fairness. But I think it's also saying something about the grace of God here, right? The grace of God is not fair, but it's good news. You know, there's a story in the Exodus. guy called Moses. He's getting instructions from God for his people. And so he goes, and it says he chisels out two stone tablets, which I thought, you know, if you ever just want like a little meditation like prompt, that would be an interesting one, to think about him actually chiseling out these stone tablets, carrying them up Mount Sinai to be in the presence of God. And he says he's going to write down letters on these stones. And then the story says that when Moses came down the mountain again, his face was shining with a radiant light because he had been in the presence of the glory of God. And his face was so shiny that he had to put on a veil because people were afraid to come near him. Right, this is Exodus 34, if you're reading along here. When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the covenant law in his hands, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant, and they were too afraid to come near him. Now, when Moses finished speaking to the people, he put a veil down over his face. But whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with them, he removed the veil until he came out. And when he came out, he told the Israelites what he had been commanded. And they saw that his face was radiant. And then Moses would put the veil back over his face until he went back in to speak with the Lord. Again, I'm just going to go off topic. It's been a week, and so I don't know if any of you guys watched Friends, but if you ever saw the one where Ross, like, whitened his teeth and then went on a date and there was like a black light and his teeth were like really shiny. That's what this makes me think of. Everybody's like, God, Moses, what is going on with you? So I think there's some literary elements to this story, right, that are trying to communicate about God. I don't think he literally carried up giant stone tablets. I don't think Moses actually had a face that was like shining like a strobe light. But it's telling us something here metaphorically, right? Moses didn't need a veil to be in the presence of God, right? To be in God's presence meant that he could expose his true self. He could be vulnerable without covering his face. He didn't have to hide any part of himself. But when Moses went before a crowd of people, he put the veil on, right? And so that seems to be in part something that Moses, something about Moses made people afraid to come near him. So in some way, maybe it was for their comfort. Maybe it was for his own. Maybe it was for his own ability to connect with people and to communicate with them and to be in community. And so while there might be aspects of us that we hide when we're with others for their comfort or for our own, when we're with God, we know that God is not focused on our appearance, our ability to fit in, but on the condition of our souls and our ability to trust them with our full selves. So this idea that Moses goes veilless is just representing his ability to be vulnerable before God without fear, without deception, and that God cares about who we are underneath all of this presentation without our armor, and that our longings are just made bare before God, and that we can be safe with them in a way that we might not be safe with a big crowd. Proverbs 20:27, the human spirit is the lamp of the Lord that shines light on one's inmost being. So I'd say as a faith community, we really want to bear witness to a God who accepts us for who we are, who wants us to be the best version of ourselves for our own good. We want to create safe space as possible for reducing shame in community. We don't want to pretend to be something that we're not. And we don't do any of this perfectly because we're human and churches are made up of imperfect humans. And we know that there's wisdom to having boundaries and to gauging who's safe to be your full self around and who is not. And people have to earn the right to your vulnerability. But we can set a tone in a community, right, that has like a certain vibe. I don't know, we had a grad student who was joining us online. I don't know if they still are, but they were studying vibes at the University of Michigan, which I thought was an interesting PhD. And so I would just say our hope, our vibe is reduced shame. And so I've often said, like, I see our church itself as a healing place, which, I mean, Elle did a great testimony of that, right? Our church itself, I've always seen as an outreach ministry. Our existence means that there's a place for people who maybe feel like they don't have a place in another faith community, and they can come and breathe and be themselves and heal and have that space. And so many of us come from these faith backgrounds where we've been made to feel like we're not enough, or we feel like we have to look like we have our act together to come through the door. Maybe we've been excluded for some part of ourselves, whether it's our sexual orientation or whatnot, for being allies of people who have been harmed. And some of us come from like really highly manipulative faith backgrounds and really need space to learn to trust God again. I can't tell you how many newcomers that we meet with say, just, like even coming in the door, like don't feel like you need to like engage, like take your time, don't feel pressure from us, and that we can be that space to learn to kind of trust it again, right? To trust God and that God is good. So I often emphasize agency. You don't have to say things you don't want to say. You don't have to sign statements of belief. You certainly don't have to agree with everything to be a member of the church. And that includes the church core values, the theological tenets. I don't need you to agree with me on everything. I don't think that's healthy. I don't think church is about ideological conformity. I usually say you don't even have to be Christian to belong to our church. What we are saying is that we are committed to a Jesus-shaped path of spirituality, and we are learning in that, and we are growing that together. And that church is about bearing witness to that path, to being shaped by it, to blessing the world around us as a result of it, and to supporting and loving and encouraging each other in that community. Right? The Apostle Paul talked a lot about how we would know whether our spirituality is healthy, and it's by what it produces in people. Right? He called it the fruit of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control, which we know some of us from the music machine, if you ever learned that growing up, if you were evangelical. Right? These are the markers that I look for in people for spiritual health, right? And that I look for in our community. And that's what I do see in our community. And so that's sort of the aim, and that is the discernment gauge. All right. So with that, we often do a little time of meditation or silence. And I thought I would invite us, I mean, people make noise, a little noise is fine. I thought I would just invite us to sit in that space. Romans 15 says, accept one another as Christ accepted you. Right, that's essentially, if we're talking about like one of the values of the church, is accepting one another as we are accepted fully before God. And maybe we can just spend a moment letting the Spirit sit with that in our hearts. Come, Lord. Accept one another as Christ accepted you. So Holy Spirit, I ask that you would just bless our community's desire to be a place where we can accept one another as we are accepted without any strings with God, and that we can demonstrate that for others, and that that will create safe and healing space for us to come and to be transformed and to grow in our walk with you and to be a light in this world. So God, we just ask that you would help us in our path to do that. Amen.